Who with it now? Welcome one and all to the Pride of Detroit podcast, also known as the PODcast. Every week, staff of us from prideofdetroit.com get in here, talk about the Lions, talk about the NFL, talk about whatever tickles our goddamn fancies. I am Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern on Twitter. In, as always, the amazing crew of fearless leader Jeremy Reisman at Detroit on Lion. Ryan Matthews, not the football player Ryan Matthews, but the fantasy football player Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD, and Alex Reno, draft guru and just kind of spaced out guy at Alex_Reno.
It's not true. It's not true at all.
How is it not true when you're sitting there?
I'm watching a baseball game in the background, if that's what spaced out means.
Well, no, it's that you plus the Mew t-shirt, sweatshirt you're wearing.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty
Pokemon.
Awesome. Yeah.
We're continuing this on.
Cool.
No, trust us, we're not talking about Pokemon Go.
No, Pokemon Go is actually dead now. Like, there's, like, I've already kind of deleted the game off my phone. I submitted my surrender to Jeremy last week.
I regrettably accepted your surrender, but watch yourself.
Why should I have to watch myself?
You shouldn't have let him back in the compound, considering how heated that discussion got last week.
And the fact that he cut the best parts.
I had to cut it because we were all yelling, and like it was just all over the place. Maybe one day it'll resurface when I'm better at working on audio, but yeah, it was an unfortunate casualty that we could not have the full argument in there.
That's okay. We all, but anyways, everyone in this room knows what happened.
Yeah, like just like we do every time we bleep out one of these things in like the hidden track, like we all know what was actually said. We know how to insult one another at Pride of Detroit. We are ostensibly a Lions website for the Detroit Lions, though, and we should probably talk about training camp. It's coming up.
We are a week away by the time this drops, probably even less than that.
Probably less than that. This is probably coming out Friday, maybe Saturday. And yeah, like training camp's coming, and a lot of you guys are thrilled to see football back on, or at least football that you will actually watch.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not thrilled that football is just about a week away, then I don't know. What are you doing? You should get a F-line session.
Do those people just live for the draft and free agency? Like, they just want to cling? I think there will be a class of football fan like that eventually. Like, just cling to the draft, cling to free agency, cling to the eternal hope of the offseason, and don't worry that once you get into the season, it's just impending dread because your team is going to go single digits in wins.
Those people are weird. Those are the people that, like, really enjoyed that NFL coach game that was one, like, they made it for 1 year and no one liked it.
NFL head coach is like Bill Cowher on the cover.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, that's
awesome.
They have those for other games too. Like, what was it? Like, the big one is like what? Pro football, like football manager. And like, by football,
kinda,
we mean.
Those are kind of different though. Those guys, yeah. I feel like those games are just a little bit different in the sense that they're much more like, they're a step away from like actually playing the game. It's just all about like managing and much more of like a simulation.
Okay. I never played this coach's game, so I don't know what
head
it is.
Head coach was a giant piece of shit. It was,
if they brought back head coach, I would be a happy paying customer.
I would not play that game. Are you kidding me? It was Madden, but you didn't get to play the game.
What, okay, you just drew up schemes or something? Like,
I love the whole off season stuff though. So I love just like doing the whole draft as a general
draft guru, Alex Reno.
Yeah, draft guru, Alex Reno. We're impinging on his bread and butter here by disparaging the draft.
And then you'd like do your own roster cuts and stuff. It was awesome.
It is awesome. Hey, you know what? I'll get that for you as a housewarming gift.
Thanks,
buddy. I'll say here's head coach. Welcome to the world of crippling debt.
You have to include the PlayStation 2 with it, though.
No, you don't.
No, because it
there it is.
Boom!
Oh God, Jeremy has it. He has it.
You have it on PC.
It was a gift, and it has never been played. This is the first time I've actually opened, and I'm thankful that the disc is actually in there.
Oh my god, dude.
Coming over right now.
Facebook Live yourself playing that.
I gotta twitch it.
We need to. Well, if Ryan would bring back Wednesday night Twitch for the Pride of Detroit staff, we would be able to have code NFL coach.
We'll see.
But training camp.
How do we get all the way out here?
Well, we don't really have a lot to talk about training camp yet because next week we're going to do a training camp podcast where we're going to cover everything. You know,
we'll be done. I think we'll be almost done with lists.
This is going to be our last list.
We have one more. Are we not doing linebackers?
I don't know. I'm okay with skipping linebackers, but we'll get to that. I just kind of wanted to give a rundown of what sort of coverage we're going to have in the upcoming weeks.
Yes, that's what I want to talk about. Yes.
The Lions don't have a ton of open practices this year. I think it's only like 5 or 6. But I know Alex Reno's planned to go on a couple of those. Ryan Matthews is going to go to one. You too, Chris, right?
Yep.
You're
going to
go.
I will be there on August 6th, I believe. I think all three of us were going to be there. But then Ryan apparently forgot that one of his friends is getting married that day, and he has to flake.
In the comment section, can you please let me know if it's reasonable to miss the ceremony and just show up to the reception if you're going to go to training camp?
Yeah, we want to know this. This is Pod Asks You. We always do POD Asks. Now it's POD Asks You. It's a new section we're doing on the podcast. And our POD Asks You question of the week is it acceptable for you to skip a friend's wedding but to just go to the reception afterwards?
I'm with Alex, who's shaking his head. If we're just talking training camp,
but I want to know I want to know what scenarios you'd have to cook up to make skipping the wedding acceptable.
I was gonna say that was pretty difficult no for you to push out, Jeremy. You were thinking it's just because you're in California and you're so far away, and you wish you could come watch Lions football. So you're too far away from the situation, Alex. I need a ruling.
Am I ruling yes or no, basically?
Yeah. Should I go or should I not go?
I already gave my head shake, so I think
head it, shake it's on yes it. Because Wingstop, we'll get Wingstop before.
Okay, all right. No,
Alex, if it's just you and me, we'll still get Wingstop.
Yeah, we can still get Wingstop. Yeah. No, it is unacceptable, Ryan. It is unacceptable.
Whatever. So, Jeremy, like you were saying, we got people covering training camp.
Yeah, we're going to try to have some camp observations for as many days as possible. Maybe even get a Facebook Live out of Chris or Alex or even you, Ryan, if you're interested.
Maybe a Periscope, too, if we just kind of do that stuff.
And don't forget Kent, too. He should be there as well.
Kent will be there, and I think Mike Payton is trying to go. I really don't know.
I think he was leaning towards not going, but you never know.
I mean, we might have an extra ticket now if Ryan's backing out.
Either way, make sure you follow all of our guys on Twitter. I'll put out a blast right around training camp of all the guys.
We'll have updates. We'll try to have some discreet pictures taken if we can. Maybe. No.
Well, you can take pictures. You just can't live video stuff. So. Okay.
So we'll have some other Jake Rudock.
Jake Rudock updates.
Yeah, updates.
I'm ready for those Jace Billingsley updates. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I should give updates, but only in the form of Limp Bizkit lyrics.
Don't be stealing my shtick.
I thought that was all of our shtick.
Before it becomes my shtick. Don't steal my shtick.
Okay. That is officially your shtick.
Well, we could also maybe give some updates about some players the Lions recently signed this week.
I don't even know who all these guys are.
I just wrote 2 articles on these guys, and I've already forgotten their names.
Luke Marquardt.
I cannot pronounce the offensive tackle's name from the small school.
Wasn't it Marquardt?
Azusa Pacific. Oh my God. Azusa Pacific gets so many commercials on radio.
Hold on. That's an amazing name. We need to restart the name tournament just to enter in Azusa Pacific.
that's the name of the college he went to. His name's Luke Marquardt.
Marquardt, okay.
Marquardt, and the defensive guy is Quantarius Smith.
Quantarius, yes.
I think some people are interested in Quantarius Smith because he was actually a pretty highly sought after college guy, but he I think it was, he tore his ACL like the November right before the draft, so he fell all the way to the fifth round, and he hasn't really been able to recover from injuries since then.
Oh, what, I'm trying to remember what college he's from. I could not remember off the top.
Western Kentucky.
Okay, yeah, they had a good
Hilltoppers.
Team. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we? Oh, sorry. Go on.
I was just gonna say, and with Luke Marquardt, same kind of deal. He had a broken foot that had him miss his entire senior year. He broke it again in the pros. He hasn't played a game yet. The weird part about him that doesn't have me thinking he's going to amount to anything is that the Jets signed him this offseason and already cut him.
Oh, no.
So, you know, he screams camp body at this point.
Yeah. Also cut this... Oh,
Any relation to the UFC fighter Nate Marquardt?
Probably not.
No.
You'd have to look that one up.
What I want to take away is, if you're not following us on social media, following our writers, following at Pride of Detroit on Facebook and Twitter... You should, because we're going to have a lot of cool stuff for training camp.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm most excited about is that we have such a varied crew that kind of specialize in all sorts of different things. So, you know, you got Reno with kind of the college perspective. You got Math Bomb, Kent Plate, I think. I keep forgetting how to pronounce his name.
Platt.
I think it's Platty. I don't think it's Platty.
He'll correct us.
Whatever, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ken.
We never get anyone's name right on this podcast.
He's the analytical guy. We got Andrew Cotto, who is our X and O's guy. And then we got Ryan with the fantasy. We got Chris with the news and kind of heart of the stories. We got it all covered.
I think my Twitter account is devolving into nonsense, to be honest. But you should still follow me.
Absolutely.
All right, we should probably take a quick break here. And then when we get back, we will talk about...
Listcast,
it's back. It's real. We are doing corners and safeties this week. 5 and 5, as we have dictated. I really want to go 10 deep on corners, but I think we've got some pretty good lists here. So we'll take a look at these after the break. All right, we're back. What do you guys want to start with for ListCast?
Let's go corners.
Start with safeties.
Oh, just kidding.
Ryan is the ListCast commissioner.
He is called
the upset here. We are now doing safeties first. And then next segment, we will do cornerbacks.
Sounds good to me.
I like where you're going.
As commissioner, I am going to say that we're going to start with safeties. And I would like to go ahead and... delegate the responsibilities of starting first to Chris Lemieux.
Again?
Yes.
Okay. He's upset right now.
Well, I'm kind of terrified because I was just talking. I know I shouldn't have been with Alex before the show just to try to allay my fears, but I think all these guys I have are actually safeties. So I think that's at least about that.
That's why we're starting with you, Chris.
All right. At number 5, I have Mr. Honey Badger. And I want to put him higher. I probably wanted to put him at probably even like 1, like, but I love this kid. I love him to death. He was my favorite guy coming out of college. He was my favorite guy kind of just all around. I love guys with attitudes. 5th, though, like the knee injury is going to be a thing. He's already going to he's already questionable to miss week 1 in the NFL season, but I mean, if he's healthy, I'd probably put him a lot higher. Just, you know, 17 passes. Like, this was his 3rd year, and now he's, like, fully at free safety now. 13 passes defended, 5 interceptions, like, a touchdown off one of those interceptions. Yeah, no,
he's good. He's higher on my list. I don't know about you guys, but he's higher on my list, and I got tons of things to say about the Honey Badger.
Okay, good, because I love him.
Yep.
All right. At number 4, again, I might have him a little lower than some of the others out here just because of how I've kind of prioritized a few guys. Number 4, I have from the Minnesota Vikings, Harrison Smith, who is, again, he's about, what is this? It'll be his 5th year in the league now, but he's cementing himself pretty well in efficiency. I know, like, statistically, he did not have that great of a year last year. He only had like what, 3 passes defended, 2 interceptions. But I just like, this is probably one of the better defensive players on that roster for the Minnesota Vikings. I think, what was he? I think he was the best rated safety from Pro Football Focus last year as well.
Yes, he was.
So yep. I think there's a lot of potential here, but like, I think the solid stats kind of pushes me away from him a little bit. I really value passes defended. Also, Notre Dame kid.
Well, there's that Notre Dame bias. Yes, he also got racked up last year. Or this year, sorry, June 6th. 5 years, yep. 51.
Oh, yeah, he got broke off, yeah.
Yeah, he paid. He did get,
I think,
paid.
His upside is pretty good, I think. So.
Oh, yeah, well worth it.
All right, who wants to take in the next 4 and 5?
I'll jump in there, I guess.
Jeremy. Sure.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, so number 5, I got Malcolm Jenkins. He's one of those guys that can kind of do it all. He can be a free safety type. He can be a slot guy. He was rated number 2 overall in Pro Football Focus. And he had 109 tackles last year. So he can also get in there, stop the run, lay on a big boom here or there. He's a guy that I think a lot of people overlook because that Eagles defense kind of dropped off the face of the earth in the second half of the season. And then at number 4, I also have Harrison Smith. Like Chris was saying, his stat line is pretty ordinary. 66 tackles, 2 interceptions, 3 passes defended, but number 1 in Pro Football Focus. And he's this weirdly underrated guy. I think he's buried on that Minnesota defense. I would bargain to say that a lot of Lions fans don't even know who this guy is. And he's in their division. And he's one of the best guys out there. He can defend the run. He's the anchor of that secondary. When I think a lot of people pay attention to the Vikings defensive front, it's really Harrison Smith who's helping them out in the back end there. So I think people overlook that a lot.
All right, I'll go though. I don't even know if you guys will even have him on your lists, but or maybe you have him higher. I have Cam Chancellor. He might have dipped in production last year, but I still think he's a guy that's going to come up in the biggest of moments, and he's done that already.
Oh, God, really?
Don't say it.
You're really going to fucking say he comes up in the biggest of moments while Jeremy's in here?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeremy.
I love it.
Apologize to the whole Lions fandom for that.
I wasn't thinking of that moment. I had to think about that for a second. I'm talking about like the Super Bowl when he got like, I think he got a safety or a touchdown or something. But yeah, when I look for a safety, I'm just going to go to number 4 because I don't want to keep talking about game changers or anything.
He's not on my list, but he is kind of that X factor that can jump in and change the entire game. But I just don't see him do that on like a full game day. Like during a full game, he just kind of comes up in those moments and pops up, but I don't know if he's reliable during the entire game.
Sure.
I think Pro Football Focus ranks him like 18, by the way. So
number 4, I also have Harrison Smith. I'll keep the tradition going. Not only is he a well-rounded player against the run and both the pass, but he's even better against the pass than people want to admit. Because I think last year he only gave up a 43.3 QB rating when targeted, which is pretty spectacular. I think he's probably one of the most versatile safeties. He might not be spectacular at either the run or the pass, but I would say he's one of the most well-rounded.
I mean, he's technically at free safety, too, so it's not
And he can also play different schemes. He can play free or strong safety, so he allows the defensive coordinator to give multiple looks, which is pretty important.
Ryan?
All right, well, I didn't have Cam Chancellor on my list. I guess the only thing I want to say about Cam, though, is that while, like Jeremy mentioned, he isn't this player who is consistently making plays throughout the entire game, I think he's more like an old school safety. Like, he's just one of those like hard-hitting safeties that I think the league is kind of, I don't want to say that the league is neutered by the way that the game has changed, because Seattle has done such a good job at, you know, adapting to the way that the game is changing. They've done such a good job at adapting their defense that, you know, they've found a way for Cam Chancellor to still be an impact player. But he just kind of made my list. If we would have done a list of 10, Cam Chancellor would have been on my list for sure.
Yeah.
Number 5, though, I had Devin McCourty from the New England Patriots. Okay. Yeah, kind of a small guy, especially for a safety, 5'10", 186 pounds. He's going to be 29 next year. The stats weren't too great for him last year, to be honest. Five passes defended, one pick, 49 tackles. But I really think that he's like the most important player, not only in the Patriots secondary, but I would say even on their entire defense. Jared Mayo is a great linebacker, don't get me wrong, but I think that as McCourty goes, I think the Patriots defense kind of goes too. So I really like Devin McCourty. At number four, he's probably higher on all your guys' lists, but I had Eric Berry at number four. Eric Berry, this is his first season back since having cancer. Jesus Christ, dude. Like, this guy, he's incredible. I mean, probably the best safety against the run, I would say, in the league, for sure. 10 passes defended last year, 2 interceptions, 55 tackles. I mean, I love the guy. I mean, the other safeties above him on my list, I think once I got like 4 through 1 on any given day, I could probably shuffle them around. But I mean, I love Eric Berry.
All right. Why don't you do 3 and 2 then?
Sure. Absolutely. Number three, I have Harrison Smith. He's so big and he's just, I don't know, like Jeremy mentioned, a lot of maybe a lot of Lions fans haven't noticed him or paid much attention to him because you have, you know, other big name, big time players on that Vikings defense. You got Linval Joseph, you got Anthony Barr. But Harrison Smith, man, like Alex mentioned, he's so versatile. Like, you know, deep coverage, underneath coverage, you know, touched on how good he is, you know, in the run, but I agree with Alex that he's so good in pass coverage. 11 pressures, according to Pro Football Focus last year, that was second among safeties.
They really like to use him as a blitzer too.
Yeah, 3 passes defended, 2 interceptions, and I mean, he may have had like a down year in terms of production this year, 47 tackles and only, you know, a sack and a half as a safety. Last year he had, or the previous year in 2014, he had 71 tackles and 3 sacks. So big things from Harrison Smith. And then number two, this is so hard to put him at number two because I flip-flopped like 2 or 3 times, but I have Earl Thomas at number two. 9 passes defended, 5 interceptions last year, 42 tackles in 2015. He limits what the offense can do. I mean, he shrinks the field the way he plays in the middle of the field. I don't know, Jeremy, if being in person watching him play is anything extra than just watching him on TV, but
you guys, Earl
Thomas is so good, man. Like, he's such a sure tackler. Like, he makes the rest of that Seattle defense work so well. I love Earl Thomas. I mean, sure. So yeah, real quick, in 2015, like I said, only 42 tackles, 5 picks, but in 2014, 88 tackles, and 2013, 78 tackles. This is a guy who's just like, he's their cleaner. He's William H. Macy, man. He's the cleaner.
All right. Let's see. Who do we go? We waited Alex next since we're reversing.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, that's a pretty good segue because I have Earl Thomas as my number 3.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
He's coming for you, boy.
I think we're going to get into like the fact that he's such a playmaker. I think everybody's going to talk about that. But what I want to point out is that he's had a 6-year career and he's played in all 16 games every season. And he started in every game every season. Like, he is pretty much Mr. Reliable.
You took Jason, one of my stats.
He's a young Jason Witten. He's a young Jason Witten.
I think like, you mean Glover Quinn.
You're always going to count on this guy, basically. And like I mentioned, I mean, this guy just makes plays. He creates turnovers. I wanted to put him higher, but number two, I just maybe I just love this dude's story too much, and I had to put him number two because of this whole cancer thing. But Eric Berry, I mean, coming back from cancer and still playing at a high level, basically coming back where you left off, is pretty incredible. I don't really have his stats in front of me right now, but I mean, we know what this guy is, and that's a guy that I want on my team. I think he was voted first team all NFL last year by the Associated Press, so it's an undeniably great story.
It is. You want me to jump in there, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Well, I have Eric Berry at number three. Like I think all of you, I've become enamored with the guy just because of his story. And something about that Kansas City team in general. I really like Kansas City. I like Jamal Charles. I like Eric Berry. And, you know, Eric Berry ranked out as the fifth guy in Pro Football Focus. And he's just, to me, the definition of an anchor secondary guy. Like, he sets the tone for that entire secondary. And Kansas City has had one of the best defenses in the past, you know, 5 years, large in part because of him. And then, like Ryan was saying, he's a big dude. Like, he can come in there and jump in to run defense and just kind of lay people out if he has to, but he can really do it all.
Like, I'm not sure if I would pick any safety that's been said so far, or even in any of our top fives, that I would rather have in the box playing safety.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at number two, I have Tyrann Mathews. He also can do it all. They have him line up at corner a bunch, you know, nickel corner. He can jump into run defense. He can blitz. He can play, you know, deep safety if he needs to. He can pretty much do it all. If it weren't for, you know, two torn ACLs, probably would be my number one. But I have to worry about that injury history with him a little bit.
Okay. And number three, I have a guy that none of us have mentioned yet, and I'm kind of terrified about it, but I have at number three, Reggie Nelson for the Cincinnati Bengals.
That's fine.
Yeah, no, I think he's really good. I think
he's a good player.
He ranked in around only number nine on Pro Football Focus, but I'm just looking at his stat line again. He's recovered two fumbles. He's defended about 14 passes. This is all just last year. Eight interceptions, which I'm pretty sure led the league for his position, or at least led the team. I'm looking at the Pro Football Reference page, so I don't really... It has letter and bold.
Eight interceptions would have led the league, yes.
He led the league in interceptions, but, like, not just that. Like, the year before, he had four interceptions and 12 passes defended. Like, he's had about a good... Since I would say about 2011, he has had very solid years with the Cincinnati Bengals. The only thing kind of holding him back is the fact that, yeah, he was born in, what, 83? So he's kind of up there in age right now. Like, he's going to be, let's see, when's his birthday? So September 21st, my birthday. So he's going to be, like 33 or so going into the season. So
birthday bias.
Yeah. No, birthday bias, Notre Dame bias. I do it all here. But yeah, like, he's a little old, but I think he's been very dependable overall. Number two, I have Earl Thomas, who, yeah, I'm sorry, Jeremy, but we have to do this.
Man, none of you got him number one.
Five interceptions last year. Like, yeah, he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
I went back and forth on my one and two. I went back and forth on Earl Thomas and Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu's number one.
Okay, we're just going
to... It was pretty easy for me to have Honey Badger as number one.
I really wanted to, but those injuries just scare... Like Jeremy, I think those injuries scare me more than even Jeremy.
He's a guy, too. Like, I'll admittedly, I did not... I know you were saying you liked him coming out of college. I didn't. I thought he was a little too cocky, a little too big for his britches.
That's, you
know,
why I liked him.
He had the suspension. That's in college.
That's exactly why
as well.
I liked him.
And I don't know. I also wasn't really convinced with his play. I thought he was kind of the risky guy who will gain a lot of attention for, like, the occasional pick six. Like a couple other guys in the NFL, more so at the corner positions. I think of Janoris Jenkins as a guy like that.
He also got
who draws a lot of attention because he gets a lot of picks and makes a lot of plays, but he also gets burned a lot. But he proved me wrong. He completely proved me wrong. I'm willing to eat crow.
You know why?
On that.
Because it's the X factor. He was coached by the best man in all of college, Les Miles. He knows how to eat grass.
I also think that he couldn't have been drafted into a better situation either.
Oh, sure. Sure. Arizona.
Going to Arizona,
yeah.
Going, you know, getting in that secondary and being in the same locker room as, you know, a fellow LSU Tiger with Patrick Peterson. He got drafted in the right situation. But the Honey Badger, man, dude, the guy had 17 passes defended last year, first among safeties. Mind you, he only played 14 games because he did have the injury. That was the reason why I kept on flip-flopping between him and Earl Thomas. But five picks, 80 tackles in 14 games, a sack. Tyrann Mathieu had 11 tackles for loss.
That's pretty outstanding.
That's pretty good.
That's insane.
From the safety position.
Let me tell you the players that he had more tackles for loss than. Von Miller, Pernell McPhee, two guys who made our edge rushers list. Players that he made as many tackles for loss as: Chandler Jones, who is now a teammate of his, Cliff Averill, Muhammad Wilkerson, Fletcher Cox. Tyrann Mathieu is he might be the most versatile defensive back in all of football. The fact that we have this debate on whether or not he's a corner or safety, because you know the base defense for so many defenses is nickel now, and he's their nickel corner. Like, he's so good.
Well, I haven't even mentioned my number one.
Who is your number one?
Malcolm Jenkins.
Whoa.
Just
number one safety in the league.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, between... Okay, so first off, he was second by Pro Football Focus. But then also just looking at the amount of stuff we have to go with, like 2 interceptions, 10 pass defense. But it's more for me, if anything, is that he had a 99-yard touchdown, like interception return for a touchdown.
It's impressive. I was going to say, by just listening to his PFF grade, I don't think you're going to win over a whole lot of Pride of Detroit listeners.
We have this weird thing with PFF now, in that we've all, like, we all use it when we want to use it, but then if they say something bad about the Lions, we're obligated to trash it. I think, like, we're in a weird place with Pro Football Focus
right now.
With
secondary, it's really, really hard to evaluate. It's really hard. Because if you're doing your job right, you're not even getting thrown at. And that's especially true for the cornerbacks, and that's
the
reason why.
That was the thing about Darius Slay last year. Right, yeah.
Right. And there's a cornerback, when we get to it, that I kept off my list for this very reason, because he got thrown at a bunch and kind of padded his stats in a certain way. But we kind of have to rely on these secondary sites at least a little bit, because they're the ones that are looking at all this film. And even the film is hard to tell from sometimes, because you have that coach's view, you certainly can't get anything from the TV views. Like, they show you
and
nothing.
In absence of all this, who do you have to turn to for film? Like Jaws? Like, come on.
Right.
The quarterbacks, I guess.
So, yeah. I mean, you really have to be watching coaches' film to even have any sort of understanding on how good these guys are. And that's what Pro Football Focus does. So, you know, at least they have a leg up on that. And, you know, I personally try to watch that as much as possible, but to watch it for all 32 teams is just way too big of a undertaking.
And that's something to keep in mind as we transition. We're going to take the break right now and come back.
Wait.
What?
You don't have my number one hit either.
Guy's number
I thought you was Tyrann Mathieu. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. What's your number one?
Yeah, Earl Thomas. Ryan talked about him a lot, and I know Ryan wants to put him at number one, but he loves Honey Badger a little too much. This guy was a first-team All-Pro from 2012 to 2014. He goes and puts up 5 interceptions last year, and for some reason doesn't make it. That's considered a down year for him. This guy is great at pretty much everything he does, and for a defense in Seattle that has so many playmakers, this guy happens to be the best, and he somehow doesn't get the attention that he deserves over guys like Richard Sherman, who I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about later. But
it's because he's not loud.
Yeah, he just does his job, and the people in the secondary who do their job the best are usually the ones that do it without, you know, lighting up the stat boards. But Earl Thomas manages to kind of do both, which is kind of incredible on his part.
You know, I would real quick though, I'd really like to kind of like go back and see some like Seattle film and stuff, because I want to know why the previous 2 years prior to last year, he had like these huge tackle like numbers, but then last year it like gets cut in half.
Yeah.
Like I'm wondering what happened like in the front seven that prevented him from getting a high tackle amount. But go ahead, Chris.
No, I just want to keep us moving along because we got a long podcast. I want to get over to corners here.
Sounds good.
Let's go to corners. All right. Sorry to move us along, guys. We got a long podcast, though. I want to get us on to cornerbacks, which is something I've been chomping at the bit at ever since we started ListCast, because I know how heated the competition gets to be the top corner in the game. Like, it is something these guys trash talk on all the time, and I want to talk about it.
So let's talk about it.
Am I starting again?
You know, you always start.
Is that the rule of the land now? Is that I always start to expose to make sure that I actually like know or do not know what I'm talking about?
Like when we inevitably do these, you know, next off season, you're gonna start next year as well.
Okay. Okay, we'll be sure to do that. Number five, The Island, Darrell Revis.
Was that a mic drop moment? What just happened?
No, I was Ryan was drinking some Arnold Palmer on the stream, and like he kind of made a face while drinking this. So I was fascinated watching that for a moment. That's all. Like
the pick tasted good. I like Darrell Revis at five.
Yeah, no, I mean, in years past, maybe I put him up higher, but I don't know. Like other side of 30 now. He's got paid quite a few times, but like, yeah, no, he's still like really good. Like everyone keeps making this about his contracts and about, you know, he may or may not be mercenary and, you know, going to New England and then jumping back to the Jets with Tampa in between somewhere there. But like, yeah, no, five interceptions last year. Like there's only played 14 games, but I mean, he's long time been one of the standard bearers, the cornerback position. So I think he's still top five.
Yeah, he didn't end up making my list, but it's mostly an age thing because there are so many good young corners that are coming up right now.
Sure.
And I think he's on the downswing of his career, and we've seen it for a couple years. He's still playing at a very high level, but
still downswing of his career, and he gets five interceptions.
Right. I just couldn't include him. He'd probably be like a six or seven guy.
Okay.
If we went
full
10.
That's fair. Number four, I have from the Denver Broncos, Chris Harris Jr. Really like this guy. I think he was pretty good for the Broncos last year. I'm just kind of looking here. Six passes defended, two interceptions, one touchdown off of the interception. And yeah, I think like if you're talking about younger corners, I believe he is what? He's going to be 27. He is 27. So I think he's got a lot of upside potential to him right now. That's the extent of my analysis. I'm not good at this stuff.
I guess I'll take over. Yep. So number five, call it a homer pick, but I got Darius Slay.
Oh,
get out of here, guys. Number two, Pro Football Focus cornerback of 2015. I think he had that stretch in the middle of the season where he gave up like three catches in 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, and then the year before that, he only racked up like what six? How many interceptions did he rack up the year before then? Like,
he's never really been that guy.
But I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, just the flexibility to go from big play Slay to shut down Slay.
Yeah, and to me, like, I just remember Darius Cooper coming into town, or Amari Cooper. I'm sorry. Amari Cooper coming into town, like riding a high, dominating the league, and Darius Slay completely shut him down. And I think he can do that with a lot of guys. He's done it with a lot of guys in the past. He's gone up against Dez, he's gone up against Julio Jones, and, you know, he's never given up like these 100-yard games or even like 80, 90-yard games.
Went up against that Broncos offense.
Demaryius Thomas.
Ooh. Listen. If you want to bring up that one game, go ahead. But Darius Slay was in the position to make plays, and pretty much all those plays that, you know, he ended up getting outworked or outjumped or whatever. But I'll take a guy that's there in the position to make the play over the guy who's going to, like, try to jump every route and eventually get beaten on a double move.
Okay. Yeah, he had a hell of a year for sure. He didn't make my list, but he... Just like Darrell Revis didn't make my list, they're both probably 6 and 7 for me.
What's your four, Jeremy?
I also have Chris Harris Jr. He was actually the number one cornerback, according to Pro Football Focus. And the defense in Denver was number four against number one wide receivers last year. So, and this is a guy who can also play multiple positions. We talked about it a lot with safeties. You don't really hear about it a lot with cornerbacks, but he's a guy that can line up, play the slot. He's a guy that can play outside, be against that number one receiver if he needs to be. He's a guy, basically, if you have that elite wide receiver that you're up against, he's going to follow him around the entire field, whether he's lined up in the slot, whether he's outside, you know, whatever he's doing. Chris Harris can kind of jump and fill that role.
Yep. Alex.
All right, yep. I have Chris Harris at number five, actually. I like him a lot. the only time he looked vulnerable, I guess, was when he played against most of our number one wide receiver last year, which was Antonio Brown, who completely shredded him. But I mean, that's going to happen to pretty much everybody that goes up against him. And I think he's one of the best cornerbacks. I mean, I think he was one of the best cover corners from Pro Football Focus's gradings. He had the best year of his career in terms of approximate value stat for Pro Football Reference. Number four, I have Josh Norman. I'm sure you guys have him a little bit higher, but I do love this guy. I mean, I do love those cornerbacks that are completely cocky, super confident, gonna get up in your face and everything. But I think he was a little inconsistent last year, so he isn't higher on my list, unfortunately.
You love the cornerbacks who pretend they're a different movie character for each game of the year?
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
Great player. Go ahead, Ryan.
Number five, I have Darrell Revis. 9 passes defended, 5 interceptions. Like Chris said, he may be on the wrong side of 30, but man, he's really good. 56.5 passer rating allowed in coverage. That was 3rd best in the NFL among cornerbacks. Opposing quarterbacks completed just 46.5% of their passes when targeting Revis, and that was the lowest rate versus a corner in the league last season. The Jets' passing defense in 2014 was 21st. Last year, it was 9th in DVOA.
Yeah.
So Revis definitely made a difference. So he's 31, but man, he's still really that good. Number four, Josh Norman.
Hey.
18 passes defended, 4 interceptions, 110 interception return yards. That was 5th in the NFL among cornerbacks. He had 2 defensive touchdowns. Allowed a league low 54 passer rating while he was in coverage during the regular season, and allowed 50 receiving yards in a game just once in 2015. So he did a pretty good job of not only getting inside OBJ's head, but also with most of the receivers he faced. That's an incredible stat. So I'll kick it to number three then.
Yes, 3-2.
Richard Sherman at number 3. What can we really say about Richard Sherman that hasn't already either been said by us or by him himself? You know, big guy, 6'3", 195. I mean, say what you want if you want to say that he's a scheme guy and that he wouldn't flourish in another system. I just think he's good. Big guy, 14 passes defended last year, 2 interceptions, 433 yards allowed while he was in coverage. That was his 3rd straight year under 500 yards, according to PFF. Also allowed 48.4% of passes into coverage to be completed. That was just behind Revis at he was 4th best in the NFL in 2015 when it came to completion percentage while he was in coverage. So love Richard Sherman. Number 2, much higher on my list than he was on your guys' list, Chris Harris Jr. 6 passes defended, 2 picks. We already mentioned, I think you guys, the 3rd highest rated cornerback in the NFL, according to PFF. This was a stat that I really enjoyed, though. Harris surrendered less than 1 yard allowed per snap in coverage for his 4th straight season, the only cornerback to do so since he became a full-time starter in 2012. Alex who touched on, his versatility. Jeremy did too, the kind of the inside-outside stuff, whether or not he's lined up in the slot or the outside. Aqib Talib gets a lot of shine, but I think Chris Harris Jr. is the best cornerback on that team.
Sounds good.
Reno, 3-2?
Sure. Number 3, I have Patrick Peterson. I'm sure he's your number 1 by that reaction, but
He definitely had his best year of his career last year, I would say. But he's a guy who's kind of been hot and cold throughout his entire career. You don't really know exactly who you're going to get every year. But in terms of raw talent, I mean, this guy is a monster. And like I said, he probably had his most consistent year last year. So he's definitely a guy I want on my team. Number two, I have Jason Verrett or Verrett?
Jason Verrett, I think.
Verrett, yes. Oh, yeah. I might be a bigger fan of him than all of you guys, but I think he is maybe the best pure cover corner in the NFL. Like, to be 5'10", 170 pounds, and to just be like this complete shutdown corner is amazing.
Ryan, because you walked away from that hot Patrick Peterson snub, you were talking about Jason Verrett.
Ahead of Patrick Peterson?
Yes!
He's going to walk away again.
Peterson's lower. He's a hot and cold player. Come on. Anyway, definitely the biggest concern with Verrett, though, is obviously the fact that he's missed 12 games in 2 years.
Can't stand the field. I mean, he's squishy.
That's probably going to knock him for pretty much everybody else, but
not on my list.
Didn't make mine.
Which is complete fucking shame.
That's what that is. Oh my God. He was under consideration, but he wouldn't have made it any above five if I, no matter how long I thought about it.
He's incredible. Anyway, when you watch this kid play, like, I don't know, he's just so good. If he was healthy and didn't miss 12 games, he would probably make all of your lists. But yeah,
all right. He's good. Jeremy.
Let's see. Number three, I got Josh Norman. We've kind of already talked about him quite a bit.
What do you think he's going to do in Washington?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because there was that recent quote from Odell Beckham saying that basically Odell Beckham made him famous. No one would know who he is.
He got the Kanye West Taylor Swift treatment, huh?
Basically, but I mean, anyone who was paying attention outside of that game last year know that
I was barely paying attention. I knew who Josh Norman's name was well before that game.
But I mean, let's talk about that situation in Carolina a little bit. Like, that's one of the most bizarre things that happened this offseason, right?
Oh God, yeah. That's play hardball too hard.
Yeah, and I wonder. I can't think Carolina is feeling okay right about now, having let that happen. And I don't know how Carolina fans aren't still uproarious over what happened, but really strange to let that guy go when they basically had him locked up.
The Panthers front office too was like super confident about letting him go too. Like, they had a chance to get him back after the whole fiasco, and like, nope, we stand by it because we're a team of the future.
That was the only way that they could play it though, right?
Yeah, that's true, right? Like, that was the only way for them to keep, like, but I mean, I don't know. I think at that point you just kind of swallow your pride a little bit, but I don't know. Maybe I'm overestimating NFL teams.
Talking about billionaires,
I guess.
All right, and then at my number two, I had Richard Sherman. That Seattle defense was number one against number one wide receivers, and he obviously has a lot to do with that. What I basically define Sherman's career as, I remember there was a game, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, where Aaron Rodgers just would not throw it his way. He completely refused to even look in his direction.
He knew what would happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's why with these quarterbacks, I'm not really going deep on statistics in terms of passes defended, interceptions, because like I said before, if you're a good lockdown corner, you're not getting the ball thrown your way. You're not racking up those stats because they're not throwing it to you. And Richard Sherman's kind of had his career defined like that, and he still managed to kind of get in that limelight because people have caught on. Like,
that cannot be a hard stat to really nail down, the idea of recording like passes thrown at your direction.
It's hard.
Is it
hard?
Is it that hard? I mean,
well, no one does it.
I got to think it can't be that hard to scrub that from tape.
Not from tape.
You'd still have to do it by hand, but I mean, it's still right. It would be easy to record.
Yeah. Just not a lot of people go through that extra effort, and when they do, they'll see that Richard Sherman isn't getting thrown to for a good reason.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you kind of had that conundrum with, Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yeah.
You know, no, nobody would throw his way. You know, he was the original, you know, Asamoah, you know, Nnamdi Island. And, you know, nobody would throw his way. But then all of a sudden when quarterbacks started to test him, like, he was getting beat a lot. Like, so for a while, he was kind of like that top dog who nobody wanted to even think about, you know, throwing his way. And then all of a sudden, you know, things can change. I don't think of Sherman like that at all. I think that
because when you throw Sherman's way, he will rack up the stats.
I was going to say, if you're foolish enough to throw his way, then, you know, bad things are going to happen. He's 6'3". Like, that's insane for a corner, and especially in that defense.
Yep. Yeah, the difference between those guys, too, is Sherman is, like, has one of the, like, arguably the best ball skills of any cornerback. And Asamoah, that was like the big knock on him, was that he ball didn't skills, even know what to do when the ball was coming his way.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Number Chris? Three, I have Josh Norman, who I originally had him higher, and then I remembered that he's now with the Washington football team. I had to knock him down a little bit. Look, no one goes to DC and seems to have their career work out for them that well. Like, no one, that doesn't happen to anyone. Who was the last guy who decided to go to Washington and, like, their career, like, took a great leap?
Certainly wasn't Albert Haynesworth.
No,
it was not Albert Haynesworth. But yeah, no, I mean, either way, Josh Norman's really good. Like, yeah, no, I, someone who is just an idiot when it comes to football. I like watching it, but I'm not really good about talking about it sometimes. Like, I knew who Josh Norman was well before Odell Beckham. Like, and he's good. He's pretty good. He'll work out for Washington. I just don't think he'll be the player that he was in Carolina. But that's still probably enough to be good enough for Washington. Number two, I have Patrick Peterson. Alex, you call him inconsistent.
Yes, but because, like, he is.
Okay, here's his passes defended going backwards in time. 8, 7, 13, 17, 13. So if you want to say inconsistent, maybe dropped a bit. But
well, like, I'm talking about, like, well, I know we balk at Pro Football Focus, but I remember there was a year where he was one of the worst cornerbacks in the league, actually.
Was it 2014 when he had diabetes and he didn't know it?
I mean, it could have been, but I think it was actually even a year before that.
Diabetes can go for a long time. I don't know. Either way, he's really good. I like him a lot. And
oh, he's
like,
great.
As we talked about with Tyrann Mathieu, too, like, Patrick Peterson, you know, kind of got that angle where he's, you know, he's not really even that old. He's like 26, but, like, yeah, he meshes really well with what the Cardinals have there.
That's the thing. Like, he seems like he's very old, but I had to look up right before I made this list, too. He's 26.
Yeah.
He's 26. Yeah. He's got plenty of years ahead of him.
He's one of those guys that just kind of exudes the quality of being an elder, though.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's hit him with our number ones.
All right. I guess since I'm the one who was doing 3-2 last, my number one is Richard Sherman. Don't you ever talk about me.
Don't you ever talk about me.
That's all I have to say. Like, and I'm not even saying that's the best thing. I just think you guys covered all the rest pretty well. This guy rewrote the book on what a corner is, in my opinion. Like, we've all started talking about kind of the revolution of the corner position when Richard Sherman showed up on the scene. And yeah, like, hyper intelligent guy, very tall, very strong, very technically skilled. Like, he is everything you want in a new age cornerback. And he's still great.
Yep. I had Richard Sherman as my number one as well. And I think he had sort of some struggles early on in the year. But after, this is a great set, after their week 6 loss to Carolina, he only allowed 218 yards for that 10-game stretch on 43 targets, which was pretty darn good.
That is pretty darn good.
How did this guy slip to the 5th round? Let's talk about that.
I mean, this was kind of before draft. Everyone realized Stanford, like, let's see. So when did he come out of Stanford? 2011. So that would actually, was that the same year that Andrew Luck came out of Stanford?
Andrew Luck was 2012, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that was the next year. So yeah, I don't know, man. I really don't know. I think thing is with Stanford's style, it was very upfront for a lot of stuff. Like, I don't know if many people were just paying attention to the the secondary there. Maybe he got that much better when he got to the NFL. I really don't know how he slipped that far. Or again, maybe corners weren't really that valued because of, man, I don't know. Seattle got a steal with this guy. All right.
Real Tom Brady.
Jeremy, who's your number one?
My number one is Patrick Peterson.
Ryan, is he your number one too?
He is. What I remember most about Patrick Peterson's career so far is just the epic battles that he would have with Calvin Johnson. And there's that awesome picture of Calvin Johnson's visor with Patrick Peterson staring right at him. And that's all I can think about. Like, if there's a cornerback in this league that could shut down Calvin Johnson 99% of the time, it was Patrick Peterson. And the only Calvin Johnson had that one slant route where he ended up beating Patrick Peterson, but that's the only time I've ever really seen him beat Patrick Peterson. I've seen Peterson probably pick off Stafford 3 or 4 times while targeting Calvin Johnson, and I've never seen that with any other.
You basically have him at number one just because of the Lions. He beats up on the Lions.
Yes, because that's the only reason he's good. I mean, let's talk about this. He's a punt returner too. No one on this on the list so far has punt return abilities like he does, do they?
I thought Richard Sherman did kick returns one. No,
I don't think so. No,
I mean, and you could put Tyrann Mathieu on either list, and I mean,
yeah,
I mean, well, the safety list, but yeah.
I mean, he'd probably make top five on cornerback or safety, though.
He wouldn't be like top of the list, top five, though. I think
for corners, I think he would
pretty close.
I mean, but just okay. Would you put Mathieu above Peterson or Sherman or Josh Norman?
I put him above Norman.
Tyrann Mathieu had a better PFF rating than Patrick Peterson last year, guys.
Okay, we'll take your word there. You guys want to get to the mailbag? Anything else?
I just want
to
talk about Patrick Peterson.
Go ahead, talk about Patrick Peterson.
Let me gas up my boy Patrick Peterson. Allowed a reception once every 19 and a half snaps while he was in coverage. Best rate among cornerbacks last year. 2014 was the year he struggled. Dude found out he had diabetes. He's still the best corner in the league. Week in and week out, this is something that like Sherman started to do like in the beginning of last year, and how, you know, Alex mentioned how he kind of got off to that rocky start. Sherman, they were trying to like move him around on the field, have him, you know, do different things, not just, you know, funnel players to the outside. Peterson, week in and week out, is following around the best receiver on the team. Like he is doing everything he can to take away the offense's best aerial threat. Like I think that he is truly like, I mean, I'm not sure if there's a whole lot of like actual like lockdown corners. I mean, we think about like back to like the Asamoah talk for a couple of years, or even, you know, Revis Island. I don't think that there are too many shutdown corners in the league, but I think Peterson is as close as you get to right now in the league. I think it has a lot to do with watching that that All In.
Oh yeah, the thing, it's on Amazon Prime, the one I haven't seen because I'm too cheap for Prime. But yeah.
Peterson is, I think he's just such a likable guy too. So I think that has a lot to do with it too. And I think he just works his ass off. And
one thing we also learned from that Amazon Prime show is that Patrick Peterson is a better quarterback than Drew Stanton.
That's not hard.
Segment? Are you kidding me?
Let's take a timeout. Let's get back to the mailbag. We got the mailbag to close it out.
A better quarterback than fucking Jake Rudock.
All right, it's time for mailbag. We always do this, and we've been getting less and less questions, which is kind of sad. Like, we really love your questions. We want more of them.
Especially step it up, fans.
Yeah, step it up. We love you, but we also want more of your love, is what I'm saying. I think
season's coming up. We need y'all in mid-season
in good form
right,
especially
now,
since we're going to be bringing back the call-in line once the season actually starts, too. So there's a lot of ways to get involved with the POD cast, and one of the ways we always do is, every time before we record, we put out a post on PrideDetroit.com, and we put out a tweet around later in the day asking for your best questions about whatever to ask us so we can answer them. It can be about the Lions, the NFL, anything.
We're experts in all fields.
All right. I think we're going to go to GV42. GV42, by the way, this is like, what, the third, fourth time he's been like the front of the list? He's been first to the park a lot of times here. So shout
Podcast out. Hall of Fame.
I mean, he's up there with like Big Haircut and a lot of the other guys who send us multiple questions. So
CB Russ,
yes.
Shout out.
Okay, GV42's got a question. Will anyone be emailing Deadspin for Why Your Team Sucks 2016? Jeremy, you've had some pretty heartbreaking stories this year, though.
Yeah, just as a little background, Deadspin does a little thing where
Drew McGarry, shout out Drew McGarry.
They do, they have fans of each team write in why they hate their team in a certain set of ways, usually describing some sort of heartbreaking situation.
Yeah, and it's usually in there with Drew McGarry just, again, completely shitting on your team.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of personal experience. I think the worst the team has ever done to me was the season opener against the Bears. My parents came and visited me for, I think, the first time out here in LA since I moved. And because I'm a terrible son, I had them watch a Lions game with me. And it was that season opener. And it was the Calvin Johnson rule play. And so the Lions ended up losing that game on the stupidest call of all time. And I just went into the parking garage of this. And this isn't my place. So I left my parents with three people they had just met, at least two of them high. And they were also as pissed off as I am. And I'm just throwing a tantrum in the garage by myself, like,
my dude,
breaking glass bottles. And I, like, eventually we just, like, I came back and I'm like, all right, let's go. And we drove home in silence for 30 minutes. And I feel bad until this day, man, to my parents. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad. But that's what this team can do to you.
Ooh, that's a good story.
Yeah, like, anyone else planning on writing them? No? I would say, like, I mean, you guys know me. I'm not hyper emotionally invested, although I was screaming conspiracy theories about the picked-up flag against Dallas. But I will say, like, it really doesn't matter whatever story or whatever kind of funny thing I can send to Drew McGarry, because when it comes to Lions, it's all going to pale in comparison to Zodiac motherfucker. Who, if you don't know him, he's a guy on Twitter who used to be like AV Club, and he sends in, you'll see it on every Why Your Team Sucks thing for Lions. He's the guy who writes in the all caps letter. And he's fantastic. And shout out to Zodiac. He's great.
Love it.
All right. Next question. Let's go to Twitter for this one. Jerry Mallory. Hey, Jerry.
Miss you, buddy.
Miss you. He's gonna be back soon. He's studying hard. He's he'll be back soon before the season, I think. Thoughts on the WWE draft with the little note, sorry, Jeremy.
Yeah, I don't miss you anymore.
I think Raw got the better end of the deal here. I think they had probably the better draft, but I think it's also set up that it looks like there's gonna be a lot more young talent on SmackDown, along with like a couple of just KG veterans there, like Cena and Styles. Ryan's walking,
Ryan?
So this is.
Ryan, you guys.
Well, I mean, can Reno say anything about the draft? Or
I mean, I was going to. I thought you were going to jump in right there, but
go ahead. Be my guest.
I was okay with it, but I mean, when you have New Day, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, just Enzo and Cass, just pretty much everybody on Raw other than Styles and Cena, I thought it was a little one-sided, even though it was supposed to be. I mean, it was fun. I had a great time
watching.
What
do you think about the NXT call-ups? Like, no Bayley, no Samoa Joe, even though I think we all knew Samoa wouldn't come up. But Finn Balor, apparently, like, he's going to be the new guy, new head of the club now, because they split up Gallows and Anderson from AJ Styles, so I guess the club is going to be in both shows now, but Finn Balor might have a role there. They brought up American Alpha. We kind of all thought they would. I was surprised they brought up Nia Jax. I was talking with Ryan about this the other week. Like, Nia Jax really does not fit the bill for what a WWE women's wrestler is, but, like, she's still fantastic to watch because she's just a monster.
I think they needed her. Like,
they,
she doesn't.
Yeah, they need someone like her.
Divas, but like now that we're in the women's division again,
yeah, it's a good nod. Like, it's a good nod.
We kind of needed her. Yeah.
I was kind of surprised. No Austin Aries. I mean, maybe he'll get some more seasoning.
Ty Dillinger,
I wasn't completely shocked by the fact that Joe didn't get called up because he's your champion, but I was also
same with Asuka as well. Both of them are champions. You can't really call up champions.
You can't call up champions, but isn't that inherently a problem? Like, why are you not calling up the champions? Like, aren't they the best that the roster has to offer?
They did that with Paige before, right?
With Paige was a surprise appearance. She was the NXT champ, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right after WrestleMania she came, yeah.
Yeah, but I think, no Bayley, but I think Bayley's probably going to, she's going to be at Battleground because Sasha Banks needs a surprise partner.
Yeah, and then, the rest, like, I mean, I'm still going to watch SmackDown a lot because I'm committed to it, and it'll be easier to watch than Raw when the football season starts. But, yeah, Raw, I think, got the better side of the deal, and I'm not quite sure why, but... But I mean, they seem to have a plan.
I think SmackDown has a good roster. I don't think it was as clearly one sided as maybe a lot of people think it was, because at the end of the day, they got probably.
They did get Kalisto, which I liked.
They probably got three of the top. They probably got three of the top six guys on the roster.
They have a lot of guys.
And they got Styles and Cena, who are bona fide stars. And then, I mean, they have the champion. They have Ambrose. But then
for now,
they've also got Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz. They've got some of those guys.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, why did Raw waste a pick on Brock Lesnar? I mean, I guess because they could afford to. Because, I mean, yeah, I mean, they do have some good talent there. But I thought the Charlotte pick was way too high. I don't know. I think it's, I mean, I'm still, like you said, I'm still fully invested in both. I'll watch both.
Yeah, yeah. And
hey, Jeremy, you alive?
No.
I just want to show you.
Who is the Zach Zenner, the guy that went undrafted that's going to blow everyone away?
Is that Curtis?
Just kidding, Curtis, I don't care. I don't even care a little bit.
Luke Harper.
Curtis actually got drafted.
That question.
No, which Luke one of the Social Owls cast did not get drafted? That was
Keith Slater.
Keith Slater, yes. He's your Zach Zenner.
When did Goldust get drafted?
He got drafted as part of Golden Truth, so he was drafted with R-Truth for SmackDown, I think. That was, like, off-air. That was, like, on WWE Network when they got drafted.
That's good, though.
Stop answering my sarcastic questions.
SmackDown
Look, man,
is
we keep
Tuesdays.
Saying this to you. Wrestling,
it's not the same night as football.
Yeah, wrestling is a great heuristic to look through the rest of sports. So it was fun that they decided to do a draft.
I hate the NFL draft. Let alone the WCW. Yeah, I'm calling it the WCW draft.
All right, let's just leave the WWE talk there, because I think we're just going to make Jeremy more mad. And speaking of that, we've lost his video. Dustin Mudd on Twitter asks, why does John Stafford go by Matthew?
Is that his middle name?
No, John's his first. Matthew's. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we've talked about this. John is. It's his name is actually John Matthew Stafford.
I know a lot of people that go by their middle name. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It's like they're like it's like a baptism name, or is it a confirmation name? I don't think he's Catholic. I don't know if Protestants do confirmation.
Maybe God, he didn't. Likes Matthew more than John.
Maybe he doesn't want to be confused with the bishop, the English politician and archbishop who died in 1452. I don't know.
Okay.
Or maybe it's just, you know, if you saw that video where they revealed to a couple Lions players that his first name was John, Larry Warford's reaction was, his first name's John? What an idiot.
Or he said, what a loser, I think.
What a loser, that's right. Yeah, what a loser. So... it sounds like he made the right move there.
Might not want to be confused with the famous baseball pitcher who...
Okay, we can stop looking at Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
I'm just saying, he died in 1940. R.I.P. John Stafford.
I'm sure there's been no one ever...
Okay. Any more questions?
Yeah, we got a couple more here. Let's go with Jacob NL. When will you be happy with Bob Quinn's first season?
When it's over?
Like, I guess he's giving us, like, different things. Like, we'll be happy with Bob Quinn if he makes the Super Bowl, the playoffs, sweeping the Packers, 8-8. I guess my answer to that is you can't do that because football is so goddamn random.
Well,
especially in his first year. I mean, this isn't even his roster really yet. You've got one draft, and of which we're probably going to see two starters at most, and a bunch of free agency guys who are more in there for depth than for starting purposes. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to give Bob Quinn a real grade on his performance until at least the end of 2 years, probably longer.
I think that, I mean, you don't want to be part of the problem. You should be part of the solution. So stop with the, you know, toxicity and, you know, the National Football League and give guys a little bit more room to breathe in 1 year. I know Jeremy's not the biggest fan of Jim Caldwell. I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily, you know, driving his bandwagon either, but I was shocked at the people who were ready to, you know, cut ties with him after last season, especially after the first season he had with the team. So, I don't know, give Bob Quinn some time to have another draft, another round of free agency, let him put out a second year, and then maybe I'll see if I'll panic or not.
Yeah, like, I think I've had my rants before about just all of this, so I think that's about all we can say on the issue. Joseph R. Sweeney has a great question about the he wants to do World Cup of football, but in, like, states, so Team California, Team Michigan, but I think we're kind of out of time to really do too much with it, but I really like it. Maybe we can try, we'll, like, tuck it away and maybe do it on a future podcast.
Sounds good to me.
It's funny, though, because, like, I know just coming from college, like, you talk about guys coming out of states. There are certain state prides. I think no matter what happens here, though, Joseph R. Sweeney, I think either Team Florida is probably winning, except on everything except, like, quarterbacks.
You don't think Team Texas?
Yeah, no, I think better football players overall. Like, Texas has the advantage because there are some quarterbacks that will come out of Texas because those have the kind of rich families that will pay for their kids to go to, like, college quarterback classes. Like, say, kind of the same deal with California in a lot of ways. Actually, I think it would be probably, like, if you're ranking these, like, it's going to be California, Texas, and then Florida. But I think overall, like, pound for pound, any athlete coming out of Florida, like, I mean, man, that's South Florida. That South Florida, Miami, Dade, just high school talent is just so good. It is so good. It's still that good. Like, colleges all over the country pick talent out of Florida these days.
Louisiana's got a hot spot, too.
Louisiana's another good one, too. Yeah, like, Louisiana, like, I know, like, and Ohio's always in this conversation. But, like, yeah, California and Texas are going to have the advantage in that they always produce good quarterback talent. New Jersey's kind of surprisingly a good high school producer of football talent as well. It's just that, you know, they don't have a college to really represent them, that whole state, well. Like, Rutgers isn't that, so that their New Jersey talent kind of gets spread across the country.
Minnesota, they've got some good talent, like Zach Zenner.
I always think of Minnesota more of a hockey state, but oh, I see what you did there. I started having my take before I could process what you were doing.
What about Massachusetts? You know who's from Massachusetts?
John C.
I see this headline on Kotaku that says, man arrested for sending death threats to Blizzard. A Sacramento man has been arrested and charged with sending multiple death threats to Blizzard Entertainment over the game Overwatch.
Oh, my God.
This is the logical extension of people bitching on the Blizzard forums.
Fuck this game.
The developers don't know what they're doing. They fucking nerf my favorite character. This is very disrespectful to their paying customers.
That's so accurate.